Today's daf is Kaf Gimel. We're going to start at Kaf Bet Amabet at the bottom. Marchikim et hasulam min hashovach. Now we're going to talk a lot about doves today. There were these little dove coats, and people would have them in all sorts of places. We'll talk about it soon. We'll start now with, if somebody has a shovach, let's say you share a wall with someone. Okay, part of the wall is in your property, part of it is on their property, and they have a shovach, and like near the wall or on the wall. So you have to, if you want to put up a sulam, a ladder, you have to keep the ladder a distance of 4 amot from the dovecot. Why? Kedei shelo tachpot hanimia. They're concerned about mongoose that are going to climb up. If you leave the ladder there, what are they going to do? Climb up the ladder and eat the doves that are there. So basically, you have to prevent that type of damage from happening. So if you have a ladder, again, put it on the part of the wall that's 4 amot distance from the guy's dovecot so that the doves don't get eaten up by the nimiyah. V'etakot ha'mina maschila 4 amot, kedei she'ehe zokefet ha'sulam. We saw this before. You have to distance it, a wall, 4 amot from a person's gutter, from their roof, so that he can have space. Remember, the ladder has to go on an angle, so that he can have space to angle out his ladder in order to get to clean out his roof, his gutter in his roof. First thing the Gemara says is, Lema matnitin deloke Rabbi Yossi. It seems that the Mishnah must not hold like Rabbi Yossi. Remember, we keep going back to this machloket, Rabbi Yossi chachamim. D'i Rabbi Yossi, thankfully the Gemara reminds us all the time what the machloket is. I Rabbi Yossi ha'amar zechofer b'toch shalo v'zenoteh b'toch shalo. So according to Rabbi Yossi, everyone's allowed to do whatever they want in their house. And therefore, I should be able to put up my ladder wherever I want to put up my ladder. So what if it's within 4 amot of the dovecot and the animal, the nimiyah, the mongoose can climb up and go eat your doves? So first the Gemara assumes that the Mishnah must hold like Chachamim and not Rabbi Yossi. So now the Gemara says, no, afilu tema Rabbi Yossi. You can even say that this is Rabbi Yossi. But Hamar of Ashi, how can we explain that this matches Rabbi Yossi? Kiyavina be Rav Kahana, Rav Ashi tells us that when he was in the house of Rav Kahana, Hava Amar, we saw this before, Mode Rabbi Yossi begeri didei. Okay, so what's the issue? Rabbi Yossi's mode that if you actively cause damage, your begeri is chitzim, if your arrows actively cause the damage, meaning your action directly causes the nezek, how does your, and now here it's a little strange, right? Your action doesn't directly cause the nezek, but we'll see why they say it is. Hachanami, in our case also, you would say that this is Geri Didei. We're going to explain in a minute how. And therefore, even Rabbi Yossi would agree with the Mishnah that you have to distance it 4 amot. Why? Zimnin, sometimes, debahade demanachle, yatva b'chor b'kafza. It could be that at the exact moment that you put it down, the animal runs up, right? He comes out of his hole. His chor, right? He comes out of his hole. He's sitting in his chor. He's sitting in his hole, and he jumps up, and he runs up. Okay, so right now we're going to assume this means that you're directly causing the damage, right? Now, you're not directly causing the damage, but it is the moment that you put it down, the damage happens. So therefore, we can call it Geri Didei. But now they say, what do you mean? Hagramahu. That's what we call grama. Remember grama? Grama means I do something which causes something else to happen. So I put the ladder there, which caused the animal to go up. I wasn't the animal that ran up. So that's called grama. And grama, what do we say? Now again, it's a bit of a machloka, but generally we say, grama medizikin pater. You're not chaya for grama. So Amar of Tuvi Bar Matna, Zot Omeret, from the fact that we say this, that Moda Rabbi Yossi begeri didei, and we do assume that this is geri didei, and we don't say it's grama, or and as we're not concerned, oh, but it's only grama. What do we learn here about grama? Grama bin Ezekin Aser. This is an interesting statement. Usually we have Chayav or Patur. So what do you mean, Grama bin Ezekin Aser? Now you have to remember, here we're not talking about you have to pay for damages. What are we talking about here? Do I have to prevent, right? Do I have to look ahead and say, hey, if I do this, something will happen that may cause damage to you? So now what we're going to say is like this. I have to move my ladder to the side because even though if I remove it close to your dovecot, since the animal might come up, right, that's my moving it, might immediately, let's call it immediate rather than directly, might immediately cause damage because the animal might come right away, climb up the ladder. Now, yes, you might say this is grama, but what do we learn from this? Grama is usr, meaning you're forbidden to do something that may cause indirect damage. Now, while we say you're patur from doing it, however, there's an isur involved. In other words, it's improper to do that. So
you don't have to pay for it, but you shouldn't do it to begin with.
Right. So now, but it's almost like it's not that you shouldn't do it, but you have to now. What are we learning? Okay. Remember, Baba Kama was all about damages. We're not talking about damages here. We're talking about preventative damages. So because grama is, let's say I would put it in other terms, is a bad thing, and it's not a good thing to cause indirect damage to someone. Therefore, the responsibility is on you to move the dovecote to the side.
The
ladder to the side, thank you, of the dovecote. To move the ladder to the side, and therefore, in order to prevent you from doing some sort of indirect damage. Some immediate indirect damage, right? Okay, so that's what it's telling you. The grama is usur, it just might not be, it doesn't mean you have to pay. So let's say you did do it, you wouldn't necessarily have to pay for it, but the responsibility is on you to prevent it from happening.
So what's the penalty for the usur?
Right, so it's a good question what that would mean. In other words, the question, so here's what it means. What it means is, the way I understand it, if I don't move it, let's say we have a shared wall, and I put my ladder near your dovecote, so you can force me to move my ladder. That's what it means. Because grama's asur. However, if I don't move it and your doves get eaten, then I don't have to pay anything. I'm not chayav in damages, but I am chayav to the extent that you can insist that I move it. That's what all these laws we're talking about are not paying for damages. All the laws we're talking about is that if I ignore these laws, my neighbor can force me and insist in the court that I have to keep to them. That's what it means. So I have to move my ladder, I have to move my wall, I have to, right? All those things that we've been discussing means the neighbor can insist that I take care of it.
But there's no way to really enforce it.
No, you can enforce it in a court of law. A court of law will make you move your ladder. Now, in the event that you didn't insist and you didn't say anything to me, then nothing happens. Right? Let's take a law, right? There's a law in Israel that you have to be quiet between 2 and 4. Right? Now, we all know that some people have neighbors that insist that they be quiet. And if your neighbor comes and screams at you, you know, you have to be quiet. But if your neighbor doesn't care, so your neighbor doesn't care, so you're allowed to speak between 2 and 4. And we're going to see that today now, that there's also cases where there's an assumption, and we'll see, that if this is there, that the neighbor either was mochel and said, I don't really care, or that maybe you paid off the neighbor and said, listen, I'm going to do this, but I'll give you some money to, I'll compensate you for it.
Can the court fine you for not moving the ladder? If he's got to court.
If the neighbor doesn't complain? Oh,
no,
can the court fine
court,
you?
Like,
that's a good question. I'm not sure. I haven't seen anywhere that they're fining you. I haven't seen anywhere a fine. But I just think that the issue, that what I understand, the issue is that they can insist that you move it. So you built a wall in the wrong place, you have to break down your wall and build a new one.
The court can enforce that. The court enforces things is by fining you if you don't do it.
Ah, right. So what happens if you don't do it? Right, that's a separate question. You're saying really is the court can fine you even if you listen to them. They can say you have to pay a fine and move it. Right? But the question is, right, if you don't, what can they do to you? Right. That's another good question.
Are there other ways to punish a person besides fining them?
Right.
Close down your business.
Right. They could do all sorts of things to try to get you. We've seen cases where they've done things to try to get people to pay up. Okay. Rav Yosef Havalu Hanu Tale. He had these short palm trees. Dehavu Atu Umne V'yatve Tutayu. The bloodletter decided, this is my spot where I'm going to take care of all my bloodletting. Okay? So he said, this is a nice tree, a nice small tree. I'm going to do it under here, I guess the shade. And what happened? Atu orve achle dama. All these ravens came and ate the blood. Or crows?
Crows.
The crows came and ate the blood. Visalke, one second. Visalke viyatve, that's what the Aleph sent to the Hagahot Abach. Visalke viyatve betale, umifside tamre. And what happened? Since they came to eat the blood, the crows, what did they do while they were there? They hung out on the tree there waiting for more blood. And while they were there, they ate all his dates. I don't know all, but they ate a lot of them. Amar lehu Rav Yosef, so remember, this was Rav Yosef's tree. So Rav Yosef said to the bloodletter, Amar lehu is lahem. He said to the court, or the rabbis.
It's just his bloodletter's plural.
Oh, okay. I see. Umne is plural.
He also
okay.
says the bloodletters.
He says
sitting
to the bloodletters.
That the tree overlooks their property.
Ah, I see. They were.
They're in their own space.
I didn't see that. Okay, so they were in their own space, but they were. They were
under his tree.
Okay, that could be. Makes more sense that that's why. Why else would they have planted themselves in his property? Amar lehu Rabbi Yosef, afikuli korkor mehacha. Korkor is right. It's onomatopoeia, right? It's the sounds like you know the noise that the birds make. Take your birds out of here. Amar le'abaye v'hagramahu. But it's only grama what they're causing, right? In other words, they're not directly causing damage. These bloodletters, they're doing their thing. It happens. The crows are coming. Amar le, hachi amar of tubi bar matne, exactly what we saw before. Zot omer grama benizikin aser. Right? This is exactly what we said, that grama benizikin is aser. So now they say, vaha achzik lehu. But wait a minute. Don't they have a chazaka that they were doing this for a while before he complained? And then they have some sort of chazaka on using this property for this purpose. So now the answer, no, because ha amar of Nachman, amar of Ravua, and we're going to come back to this later today also. Ein chazaka l'nizakin. Okay, what does chazaka mean? Chazaka means that if I'm using something for a period of time and no one complains about it, I can claim it's mine. And we're going to learn also later that, let's say, I take over some piece of land and I sit on it and I'm there for 3 years, no one complains, all of a sudden the owner comes back and says, hey, this is mine. Now, what's the issue? The issue is, after 3 years, there's an assumption that people don't save documents after 3 years. So there's an assumption that I had a shtar and I don't have it anymore. Now, if I come to court and I claim that, I have to bring a claim as to how the land got into my property. I don't have to prove it, but I at least have to say, I bought it, I inherited it, I something. Right? Because what happens? The other guy brings a shtar that, you know, let's say from 10 years ago, I bought this land. Here's my shtar. I produce no shtar, but I say, yeah, it's true, you have a shtar, but you sold it to me, and I just don't have proof anymore. Or, you know, you sold it to my father and I don't have proof. So we're going to see certain cases where you actually don't even need a claim. But anyway, right now they're going to say, it's not clear from here what kind of chazaka they have on this land and what, was it 3 years that they were doing this? It's not so clear. But anyway, right, there's different types of chazakot for different things, and maybe 3 years is really for land and this maybe isn't land. Again, depending on the scenario, maybe this is their property actually. We're not talking about chazaka on the property, but we're talking about that this is their property. They were doing it under our shared tree. In other words, again, the tree, the crows came to the tree from the other side, but they were doing this for a while, and Rav Yosef didn't complain until a certain point. So now what are they? Rav Nachman says in the name of Ravua, this is a very important statement, Ein chazaka l'nizakin. What does that mean? The whole concept is that if I'm living in some land, and for 3 years nobody complained, and all of a sudden after 3 years they appear and start saying, that's my land, I can say, where were you all those 3 years? Why weren't you complaining then? So here there's an assumption that the reason the person wasn't complaining was because the complaint was obvious. If you're doing something on my property that's causing me damage, then obviously
I don't like it.
And it's clear. It's so clear. We call this maybe even in the Gemara, they sometimes use this term, anan sade. Everybody can testify to the fact that nobody wants that there. So therefore, if you're causing me damage, then no such thing as a chazaka. The bloodletters can't claim we have a chazaka here to be bloodletting here because there's no way that anyone would allow that kind of thing when it was causing damage to their property. So now they're going to say, wait a minute. Ein chazaka l'nizakin doesn't apply across the board. And that's why they can claim they do have a chazaka here. Because v'lav itmar ala, wasn't it said about that statement of Rav Nachman in the name of Rabbi Ravua that Rav Meri amar bekutra v'Rav Zvid amar bebeit hakise. That Rav Meri said, this is talking about ein chazaka l'nizakin when we're talking about smoke. Smoke is a type of damage that people won't tolerate. And Rav Zvid says it was talking about an outhouse that wasn't properly closed. And obviously, right, this is a very clear case. No one's going to say, oh, you know, the smell of the bathroom really didn't bother me, right? It's obviously going to bother anybody. But that we're talking about nizakin that are so clearly problematic that everybody would be bothered by it. But not necessarily, right, other types of damage. The fact that the birds ate the tamarim is not the biggest kind of damage. It's not the kind of thing that we'd say it's so clear. One can argue with that, but that's what Rav Meri and Rav Zvid say about this. So now, Amar Leh, So what does Rav Yosef answer to say no? Really, ein chazaka l'nizakin in my case, because hane l'dide da'anine da'atai ki kutru ubeta kise damile. These, for me, since I am an istinis, I'm an anine da'at, which means I'm very particular about everything, I'm OCD, right? So if somebody comes into my, right, starts taking my stuff, for me, that's like as if there was smoke or a bathroom, an outhouse there.
But that's not obvious to everybody.
No, it's not, but what it shows is this chazaka l'nezakin is subjective. Okay? At least he understands it as being subjective, whether or not.
That makes it very difficult.
It's very hard. It does. It makes it very difficult, because, right, it's almost saying, the way I explained in the first case sounded like it has to be objective. These things are objectively objectionable.
Right.
But yeah, he claims that, to me, it's like this, and maybe he thinks everybody knows him, and everyone knows he's an istinis, and therefore it would be okay. Do you want to switch the light on? It's getting dark. Okay, new Mishnah. Continuing with dovecotes. Marchikim et ha-shovach min ha'ir chamishim ama. We separate a dovecote from a city chamishim ama. What's the issue? We're worried that doves are going to go, okay, there's two possibilities. Rashi says that they're going to eat zaronei ginot. They're going to eat the garden seeds. But you have to separate your dovecotes from the city 50 amma, because the doves will fly around and eat people's seeds.
We saw this a very long time
ago. We saw it a long time ago? Okay. It could be. I don't remember. You can look in Gimel. Yeah, in Bava Kama. Very good. Bava Kama Pei Gimel. Okay. So now, or it could be that they're going to eat the tvuah, the grains, and the seeds that you put to dry out. They might eat, come and pick at those. So therefore, you have to distance it from the city, chamishim amma. Belo ya'asen adam shovach betoch shelo, elen ken yesh lo chamishim amma l'chol ruach. And not only that, but if you're putting it in your field, you have to make sure that there's 50 amma in each direction around you, so that it doesn't go into other people's fields and eat their stuff, not just in the city, but even out in the fields, away from the city. Remember, we saw that all the fields were outside the city. You still need to leave chamishim amma misaviv. We'll get to this amount when we get to the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, if you're talking about in the fields, when there's other fields around you, Beit Arba'at Kurin Melo Shigar Hayona. Okay, this is, we saw it yesterday or 2 days ago, how far the fish swims. Now we're going to see how far the dove flies. Okay, and he says that's an amount that's 4 kurim full. Okay, it's the amount of the size of a field that you could plant 4 kurim. Okay, if you remember, a kur is 30 se'ah. Okay, we've seen this before. So 4 kurim comes out to 75,000 square cubits, which is about 18,750 square miles. Okay, a very large space. How you could ever do this is hard for me to imagine.
Right?
It's a crazy amount. Again, this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Okay, we don't pass in that way. V'im lekacho afilu beit rova hareu b'chezkato. But if you bought it, and it was all right, the dovecote was already there, and it was within a beit rova. Now this is, okay, let's go to our measurements. So, if 30 se'ah to a kor, we're talking about 4 kurim, okay, there's 6 kavim in a se'ah, and a rova is a sixth of a kav. Okay, so without, right, you can do, right, it's se'ah is a 30th of a kor, a kav is a sixth of the 30th of the kor, we get to a rova kav is one over 720 kurim, okay? And if you multiply that by 4, right, it's 1 over 2,880 of the amount that Rabbi Yehuda said. So what we're now going to say is, even if it's a very, very small amount, if you already purchased it and it was there and the other field was nearby, then you're areu b'chezkato. And the assumption here is that the owner of the dovecote must have made a deal with the neighbors that it was okay, right? He must have maybe paid them off or something like that, and you're allowed to keep it. Okay, we're assuming that the first one had rights to put his dovecote there if it's there. It's an interesting assumption, right? The assumption is if you buy property and there's a dovecote in the property, even if it doesn't match the halacha, right, and how much it needs to be distanced, but still we can say that you can assume that the guy must have done it, kamosha tzarich. Okay? So now the Gemara starts asking about this chamishim amma. Chamishim amma v'tulo. The assumption is that a bird flies 50 amma and not more than that. Right? It does sound quite strange. Birds fly pretty far. Uriminhi. Now again, they're not going to bring it from science or, you know, try to prove it. experiments. Where are they going to bring it from? Another braita. Ein porsim nishbin leyonim, ela im ken haya rachok min hayishuv shloshim ris. I think this is actually a Mishnah, if I remember correctly. That you can't put out traps. This is where we saw this in Bava Kamma. You can't put out traps to trap yonim unless your distance from the yishuv shloshim ris. What's the assumption? The same bottom line assumption here, which is that if you put out traps within 30 ris of where people are living, then you're going to catch other people's birds because birds will fly 30 ris. Now, how much is 30 ris? 4 mil, okay, which is way more than 50 amma.
So 2,000 amma.
It's 2,000 amma. One meal is 2,000 amma. Okay, so times 4, 8,000 amma. Okay, so that's a huge difference. So Amar Baye, Meshat Shaite Tuva, they do fly very far, like the Shloshim Ris, Ukrasaihu, but their stomachs, b'chamishim amtamalia. Okay, so what does that mean? We're worried here not about how far they'll fly in terms of getting caught in traps. We're worried about how much of people's stuff they're going to eat. So the point is they're going to eat for the first 50 amma, then they're going to be satiated and they'll fly without eating. Okay, interesting assumption. Now they say, Umeshat Shloshim Ris Vitulo. Now we're jumping forward. We already dealt with our Chamishim Amma versus the Shloshim Ris. Now we're going to ask about the Shloshim Ris number. But they really only fly 30 Ris and no more. V'hatanya Ubayishuv Afilu Me'a Mi'a Lo Yifros. Now we have a contradiction between the Mishnah of Ein Porsim Nishmin Leoni Elen Kenei Arachok Shloshim Ris to Lo Yifros, if he's in the Yishuv, even Me'a Mi'a, okay? Even 100 Mi'a. Okay, the ris is 40, it was 4 mil, 30 ris. Now we're talking about 100 mil. Think about the huge difference. It's so interesting in the stuff in general. The differences in distances are huge, right? Usually the machlokot are small, but the differences between them are minimal. So now what do they say? Rav Yosef Amar B'Yishuv Kramim and Rav Amar B'Yishuv Shovachim. So now we're going to say that there's a difference between the way birds will fly if they're flying, according to Rav Yosef, over vineyards. They will fly farther. That's the assumption. The 100 mil distance is if they're flying over Kramim, and according to Rav, if they're flying from Shovach to Shovach. You know, they have resting spots, I guess, or I don't know exactly the difference, but basically he's going to say that's where there's a yeshuv of Kramim or Shovachim. We're going to assume he flies much farther than if it's not a yeshuv that has Kramim or Shovachim. But again, this Rav Yosef says one, Rava says the other. V'tepuk le mishum shavachim gufayhu. Why don't you say that the mea meal is... Right, why don't we say that we're worried about the shavachim, and that you have to distance yourself from other shavachim. Remember that? Because otherwise you'll catch... You'll catch other yonim, right? That it'll... Right? This is the trap issue?
No, it's just that they're moving to other... Or stopping other dove cotes.
That what?
I assume it doesn't say that they're... You don't want other birds taking rests in your shavach. So isn't that the point that if there are dove cotes around, that's not...
No, because again, this is the pre-stop malkodot. We want to... We're, again, talking about that brayta. We don't allow you to put... What did we say? We don't allow you to put up a trap, right? Here's a trap. We don't allow you to put up a trap within 100 mil, right? So then they said, when is 100 mil? It's when there's kramim, right? Or shovachim along the path, right? A shovach. Now, how could you possibly put up a trap? We're saying 100 mil because that's how far birds can fly from the yishuv. But now they're saying, what do you mean? All along the way, we said there's dovecotes. How could you then possibly put the trap here when there's birds on the way that are going to get trapped? Might be 100 mil from some other spot we're talking about, but what about all the birds there? So now what are they going to answer? It's a case where you're not responsible for stealing birds in this kind of way. Ibait ema didei. Maybe all the dovecotes belong to you. Kind of unlikely, right? We're talking about such a huge space. I think you own the whole area. Maybe it belongs to a non-Jew. Now, there's a whole debate here about... There's a debate in general, remember, about whether gzela from a non-Jew is gzela or not. Some people say even if you hold that it is gzela to steal from non-Jews, in this case, it's not really gezel. It's not gezel mamash. You're putting up a trap that the birds eventually might come into your trap But it's not like you're stealing with your hands, and it's not, right? It's different kind of stealing. So it could be
grama steal.
Right, it's like grama. It's just a different, right? It's not gezel midoraita. It's only gezel midorabana. And that, even if you say that you're chayvin gezel, when it comes to non-Jews, when it comes to, right, you are chayvin gezel, but not in gezel like this.
How do you know okay. this stuff is? It looks Jewish.
Right. So it would have to be a way where you know whether it is or not. Right. It's a good question whether Dine Rove would apply here. Rove or Kanani. We're going to get to Rove in a minute, but it's interesting they don't bring it up here. Okay. The Ebite Ema Dehefker. Okay. If you don't accept the Kanani explanation, right, you could accept the explanation that maybe there's just dovecotes out here and it's all Hefker. They don't belong to anybody. Okay. And therefore, you could say no problem with the traps. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Beit Arba'a Kurin V'chule. Now the real important line here is the end, right? That im lekacho afilu beit rova hareyu b'cheskato. Right? If you bought it that way, we can assume it's that the original owner. Now we're going to talk about this assumption. We assume that the original owner took it legitimately, fair and square. Amar Rav Papa v'itamar Osvid. Either Rav Papa said this or Osvid. Zot Omeret. From here we can infer a different halacha. Toanim lelokach b'toanim liyoresh. Okay, what is Tonim? We've seen this before, for example, with Yatomim. Yatomim come to court and someone's, you know, against them. Now, if there's a claim that the father could have made himself, but the father's not here to make it, but obviously they're arguing about something about the father's money, the father didn't pay him this, that, whatever. If there's a claim that potentially could have been made, even if we don't know if it was true or not, the court can make that claim for the Yatomim. If they have an out, they're allowed to come and make that claim. That's what it means here. The court can come and make a claim for a lokach or a yoresh. Why? What's a lokach? What's a yoresh? A lokach is someone who buys something from someone. That's like our Mishnah. You bought this property with the dovecote on it. The dovecote doesn't look like it was done kemoshe tzarich, right? It doesn't look like it was done halachically. But since the owner's not here to claim how it came about that this happened, we can assume the court can come in and say, we'll make the claim for the original owner that he must have done this the way it was supposed to be done. He must have paid off the neighbors, or that maybe they were mochel him. So we can make such a claim. Okay? Or for yoresh, the same thing. Okay? So that means that if I'm... Okay, what does it mean, lelokach liyoresh? Right? We explained it in our case in the Mishnah. Let's say I inherit property, and the original owner comes to me and says, hey, look, I have a shtar for that property. And I don't have the shtar of my father that says that my father bought it from him. So the court will come in and say, listen, even though generally, in order, remember what we said, if the lokach can prove, or the yoresh can prove, that the person they bought it from, or the person they inherited from, lived there for 3 years, remember what I told you, for a chazakah you need two things. You need chazakah of 3 years, and you also need a ta'ana that says, I bought it, or I inherited it, or something. Now, in this case, the person is not there anymore who bought it, who can claim, I bought it, right? Remember, there's three people here. There's the original owner, there's the in-between owner, and now there's the person he either sold it to or gave to an inheritance. So now, what are we worried about? That person's not there to tell us the claim, I bought it, I inherited it, I whatever. So therefore, what do? The court can come in and make that claim. As long as he can prove that the person he bought it from or inherited from lived there for 3 years, then he doesn't need the ta'ana. That's what it means, ta'anim. The Beit Din can come make the claim even... What does it mean they make the claim? They don't really know if the claim is true. But they can make a claim, a fake claim, right? Assuming it's true. Okay? Which really means, in essence, you don't need the claim. Right? You can get it without that claim. So now they say, so there we can infer from our Mishnah, because the same thing, right? The lokach didn't have to prove that the guy had made an arrangement about the dovecote with the neighbors. So now, Rav Papa and Rav Zvi say, from here we can infer the tonim lokach, tonim liyoresh. So now the Gemara questions, what do you mean? Why are we learning it from this Mishnah? It says it explicitly in a Braita. Yoresh tanina, haba mishum yerusha. Actually, I didn't check if these are Mishnayot or, they might even be Mishnayot. M. Aleph. Yeah, it's a Mishnah. Okay, it says in another Mishnah, Haba Mishum Yerusha, this is Mem Aleph, Eino Tzarich Ta'ana. It says if you're coming Mishum Yerusha, you don't need the Ta'ana of I bought it. So then they say, ah, lokech itzrich alei. No, he needed it. He said both. But really, the chiddush was lokech. So now they say, lokech nami tanina. It also says in the Mishnah, lakach chatzer, ubazizin, this is in Samach, Amar Aleph. If you bought a chatzer, ubazizin ugezuz traot. Now, what are these things? These are things that stick out from zizin, or these poles that stick out, and gezuz traot, I think, are terraces.
Balcony.
What?
Balconies.
Balconies. That stick out, jut out from your house, and the assumption is, where do they jut out? Into Rishud Arabim, they jut out outside your property line. Hare zebeches kato. Hare must be hare elu beches kato. I don't know. Hare what?
Ze is in parentheses and zo is in parentheses.
Ah, zo. Okay. Hare zo beches kato. Okay. You can assume that they're his. Okay. Why? Because you can assume that he must have either made an arrangement with the you know, somehow. Right? Or you can assume, we'll see later, that maybe he moved his property, maybe he moved his house over, and the things are jutting out within his property. Okay, so now they say, so therefore, it says it there explicitly, hareza b'chez kata, meaning that we already know, to'anim lo, right? He doesn't have to prove it. So, tsricha, now they say, no, you need it, you need to say it anyway. Why? You need both of them. You need both the yoresh and you need the lokach. If you just had it in the chatzer case, what would you say? Lokeach chatzer. That case, maybe he moved. Kones l'toch shalohu. Maybe the zizim gezuz traot are within his property. Maybe he made sure that they were in his property line. Or inami achule achle b'nei reshit harabim gabe. Maybe b'nei reshit harabim were mochel. Aval hacha, but in our case with the shavachim, you might say lo. V'iyash minan hacha, but if you have with our case, what might you say? Dekevan diyachidhu, ema piyuse paise. With my dovecot, what am I concerned with? My neighbor. Maybe I made arrangements with my neighbors that it was okay that I put up my dovecot here. Whereas Rishud Arabim, right? Who am I making a deal with when it's Rishud Arabim? It's interesting. Here they use the exact logic opposite. First they said, oh, it's easier. You could just say Rishud Arabim was mochel. But the second is saying, what do you mean Rishud Arabim is mochel? How are all the people in Rishud Arabim going to be mochel you? The inami achule achle gabe, right? Or he was mochel you, the neighbors. Aval rabim, man pies, who are you going to be mafayes if it comes to the rabim? Uman shavik, and who's going to say it's okay? So therefore, emalo, and therefore tzricha. Okay, that's why you needed it in both cases. Harehu b'cheskato. V'ha'amar Rav Nachman amar Rav Ravua. Ein chazaka l'nizakin. I said we get back to this, right? Didn't we say ein chazaka l'nizakin? So how can you assume when you buy this property, the dovecote's there, if the dovecote might potentially cause damage to the other neighbors because the dove's going to go eat your seeds? So isn't that damages? And then we say ein chazaka l'nizakin. So how can you assume that it was all okay with the neighbors? Rav Meri Amar b'kutra v'Rav Zvid Amar b'Beit HaKise, right? This isn't the same type of damage as the smoke and the Beit HaKise, which are clear damages that people aren't remember. They qualified the statement of Ein Chazaka L'Nizakin. It was only for those type damages. And the bird eating your seeds would not necessarily fall into that category.
Is that a rejection of Rav Yosef's claim that it's subjective?
No, it's not a rejection. It's saying, Rav Yosef saying, for me, this was... But we don't know for those neighbors if they're such istinisim and that they care whether someone eats some of their seeds. We're assuming that that's not the same category. Okay? Also, this is a general case. That was a specific case where we could rule in a specific case, maybe specifically, this person's an istinis. I'll put it this way. If he was living, we all know sometimes people have crazy neighbors who are very much peed on all sorts of things. If the guy who, let's say I bought a property and there was a dovecote in it, and I know that the neighbor is absolutely crazy about any sort of anything, then you can say that he would be an istinis in that case, and the assumption would be there's no chazaka. I would assume that would be the case. Okay, now we're going to get into dinim of chazaka, and we're going to about rov and some other things. We'll see right now in the next Mishnah. Nipul, I think it's nipul. How do they? Nipul, nipul. They say it. No, I'm trying to see the pronunciation. It's nipul. Okay, nipul hanimtza b'toch hamishim ama. Okay, it's a baby dove, a chick that's within hamishim ama. Let's say you find a chick and you don't know who it belongs to. This sounds more like Baba Metzia, right? Harehu, we'll see the terminology of Yachloku soon, like we saw in Baba Metzia. A nipul that's in between Chamishim Ama, okay, within Chamishim Ama of your Shavach. Harehu Shabala Shavach. Chutz Mishamishim Ama, Harehu Shalmotza'o. Already then, right, within Chamishim Amah, my dovecote, if we find a little dove chick, we assume it's mine. Outside Chamishim Amah, we assume it could belong to anybody, meaning anyone who finds it gets to keep it. Nimtza ben shnei shovachot, what if it's in between two dovecotes? Karov lezeh shelo, karov lezeh shelo, we see who it's closer to. Right, this sounds a little like what? The egla arufa, when they start measuring, and we're going to get to it right away in the Gemara. Mechtza al mechtza, if it's exactly in the middle, shneim yachloku, okay? Then they split the dove 50-50. Obviously, we're not going to chop them in the middle. We're going to sell it and split the proceeds. I'm a Rabbi Chanina. So now comes the Gemara. Rabbi Chanina says, Rov v'karov hochim achar harov. If you have rov and you have karov, we're going to follow the rov, okay? V'af agav, we'll get to this in a minute. I'll explain it a little better in a minute. Af agav deruba deoraita, v'korva deoraita, afilu hachi ruba adif. This is what he says. If you have two conflicting, so to speak, chazakot, right? We have the rov, meaning the, okay, right now he's not talking about our case, so we'll connect it to our case soon. But let's say you have a suffix about something, and it's like the meat, right? The meat in the middle of nine stores. So if the majority are non-kosher, right? But let's say it's close to the kosher store. So which wins out? The fact that it's close to the kosher store or the fact that the majority of stores are not kosher? Okay, so if you have those two conflicting things, we're going to go by the rov. Okay? Rov v'karov, rov adif. Even though, right, those are each principles that midoraita would hold. Okay? If you just have one or the other. Okay, so where do we learn rov from, and where do we learn karov from? Okay, rov we learn from acharei rabim lahatot, and we go in based on the majority, and karov we learn from the egla arufa vayta ha'ir hakrova. Okay, the closest city is going to have to remember the egla arufa. Someone's dead, we find a dead body outside, not in any city. We measure to the closest city. Whoever's from the closest city, they have to bring an egla arufa and assume responsibility that they kill, that, you know, they have to say yadenu lo shapcha and tadamazeh. They break the neck of the egel, etc. So now we're going to have a bunch of questions on this concept that Rabbi Chanina says. Mativ Rabbi Zera, v'haya ha'ir hakrova l'chalal. When it comes to the Egla Arufa, we go by Karov. Even though we could say, why don't we see, right? If you take, what would the majority say? We'd say, well, where are the most people, right? Which city has the most people? Let's say there's a small city nearby, and there's a huge city a little farther away. So let's say there's 100 inhabitants here, and 1,000 inhabitants there. So wouldn't you say, chances are that one of those 1,000 inhabitants killed the person and not the 100 people from the nearby city? So here you see that Karov beats out Rov. So Rabbi Chanina, how could you say Rov beats out Karov? Egla Rufa proves that Karov beats out Rov. So what are the answer? Egla Rufa is bidaleika. It's when there isn't a bigger city nearby. So then they say, wait a minute. But you could say between this city and there must be some city in the world that has a bigger population. You know, so let's say some far off city has a much bigger population. There's always some city that has a bigger population. Or why don't you just measure it against the people in this city versus everybody else in the world who could have potentially killed this person? So still, it's Karov beats out Rov. So what are the answer? The Egla Arufa, right? We're basically narrowing the case of Egla Arufa, is b'yoshevet ben haharim. It's when it's the city is between mountains, which basically means that people aren't going there. They're not hiking, trekking there all the time, and therefore we're assuming it was between this city or any of the other cities that were basically the same size inhabitants.
And that really holds for Egla Arufa all the time? I mean,
do we hold that for Egla Arufa? It's interesting. I didn't look it up lahalacha, but there's an Ot Dalet here, which sends you to the Rambam. Ah, here, this is very interesting. Look at the Dalet, Eimish Patner Mitzvah. Okay, it's on the corner, top corner on the right. HaRambam Hishmit Zeh, Vayen Sham V'Kesef Mishnah. The Rambam doesn't quote this, the Halacha, and the Kesef Mishnah, which is written by Rabbi Yosef Karo, wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he comments on it. So anyone who's interested can go look there and see. Okay, it's very interesting. You'd have to look, if you look right before, it says, it's Perek Tet Mehilchot Rotzeach Halacha Vav. That's where you would find it. So if somebody wants to look it up, you can find it there. Okay. Tnan. Now we're going to second question against Rabbi Chanina. Nipol hanimtza b'toch chamishim. Now you have to remember, why wouldn't one necessarily paskin like this? Because again, it was brought as a question, and in order to answer up the question, they brought this as an answer. That doesn't always mean, it's always a big question. In Piskei Halacha, do you paskin based on an answer that the Gemara gave to resolve a particular dilemma that the Gemara brought up? Right? It doesn't necessarily mean you have to paskin that way. Okay, Tznan. Nipul Hanimtza. Now we're going to bring our Mishnah, right? Because what does our Mishnah go by? Karov and not Rov. Again, it's going to go by who's closest. Nipul Hanimtza b'toch hamishim ama harei u'shabala shavach. Va'af agav di'ikachrina dinafish mine, right? Even though there might be other places where they have, let's say, more doves than you do or more dove coats than you do. So again, what are the answers? B'deleika, there aren't any others there. Yihachi ema seifa. But then, look at the seifa. It says, chutz mishamishim ama. If there's no other dovecotes around that are any bigger, then why don't we assume Badai Mehahu Nafel? Why don't we assume it came from this guy? Why do we say past Chamishim Amah it's not yours? Right? If we say within Chamishim Amah it's yours and it doesn't belong to someone who might have a bigger dovecoat outside Chamishim Amah, so then once it gets outside Chamishim Amah, if there's, we're assuming there's no other dovecoats around. Well, if there's no other dovecoats, then even past Chamishim Amah it should belong to him. So obviously there must be other dovecoats around. So what are the answer? Ha'cha b'mayaskinan b'madada. It's talking about a chick that hops around, that can't yet, okay, the baby doves don't yet fly. It's talking about a chick that hops around, which means that he can't get, okay, da'ama rav uchba rachama, kola midadeh, e midadeh yoter mi chamishim ama. Okay? In other words, the assumption is, if it's past chamishim ama, it's not my chick. Because the chicks don't go that far. They only hop and they can't get farther than chamishim ama, because there's an assumption they're always going to go back to their, you know, be in a space where they can see their own dovecote. By Rabbi Yirmiyah. This is a great ending to today's daf. Raglo echad b'toch chamishim ama. You remember Rabbi Yirmiyah? He always asks these nitty-gritty questions. What if one leg of the chick is b'toch chamishim ama? Raglo echad chutz mi chamishim ama. Okay, what if he's half-half? Mahu. Here's the best line. Ve'alda afku l'Rabbi Yirmiyah mi beit midrasha. For this issue, they kicked him out of the Beit Midrash.
They finally had enough
okay?
of his questions.
They had enough of his questions. No more Nunuki questions now. There's two explanations given here, okay? One is to say, what do you mean they kicked him out because of Nunuki questions? First of all, we all know that the Gemara in general asks Nunuki questions. Now, you could say, you know, it's to an extent, okay, I've taught classes before, more discussion-oriented, not like this, and particularly with younger girls, and they can ask questions that go, you know, totally off exactly Rabbi Yirmiyah type questions that you can never get anywhere in teaching. So they basically said, we're not getting any learning done because you're getting us off the topic. Just get out of the Beit Midrash. But other people explain, actually, that what he was really saying is, we just said that they only hop 50 amma. So why is he bringing up a question where raglo echad chutz and raglo echad bifnim, he's basically being mizalzel, he's taking very lightly the shirim that the rabbi said, because he's saying, well, maybe it can go a little bit out of chamishim ama. And he's basically disregarding what they said and being disrespectful about it and saying, well, you said chamishim ama, but really it could be a little bit more, and maybe he'll have 1 foot out. And then they said, you're being mizalzel out of the Beit Midrash. So there's two different explanations. You'll have to wait toward the end of the Masechet. It's not the very end, but I think it's Kuf Tet Zayin, where it tells us the story of how they brought Rabbi Yirmiyah back into the Beit Midrash, on what basis they let him enter. So we have about a little less than 100 dapim to get there, but
no,
we will get there. We will get there. Okay.
4 more months.
Let's go on a drop more. Tashma, next question on Rabbi Yirmiyah. Not Rabbi Yirmiyah. I'm Rabbi Chanina. Nimtza ben shnei shovachot, karov lezeh shelo, karov lezeh shelo. Va'af agav decha minayu nafesh mechavre. Right? It sounds like it just whichever one is karov, even if one might be larger than the other. So again, right, wouldn't you say, let's say one has more doves than the other, then wouldn't it be more likely that the chick would come for the larger one? So what do you see? Karov virov, karov is adif. And against Rabbi Chanina. So again, what do they say? Hacha b'maskina chashneim shavim. It must be that they're exactly the same size. V'lezel bataruba da'alma, but still, maybe you should go by rov of the olam, if we're going to say rov is adif. Hacha b'maskinan b'shvil shel kramim. We're talking about where there was a shvil of kramim between the two fields and where the two dovecotes were. Dim ita de me'alma atu, kevan de midade, lomate ate, dechol de midade, bahadar, chazele lekine midade. Okay, this is what we said. Ve'ilo lo midade. In other words, a chick will only wander and hop so far as it can always chazele lekine, right? It'll see its own nest. So therefore, if we have this shvil of kramim, you see the birds flying on the shvil of kramim between two fields, and the dovecotes, right, of each person are on their fields, then the assumption is that the bird will only go where it can see its own shovach. He's only going to hop in that area. And therefore, we don't go by rov of the olam, even though maybe in a different case, we might go by rov of the olam. But in this case, since it's a little chick that hops, he only hops within a place where he can see his dovecot. And that's why it must belong to one or the other. V'ilo, and if he doesn't see his own dovecot, lo midide, he's not going to hop there. Okay, and therefore, we can assume we're going to follow karov instead of rov, even though... Right, Rabbi Chanina holds rov over karov. It doesn't conflict here because here we're talking about a unique case where he's hopping and he's only going to hop where he can see his own cane. Okay, stop here.
So at least so far we haven't seen any support for rov.
For rov,
we haven't
right.
seen a single
case. Well, that's because we're specifically right now bringing all the rejections. You know, we're challenging here.
Right.